This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Travel Tuesday. Why so many people head to cruises this time of year. Also, the challenge in value versus growth stocks as we look ahead. Starbucks and Beyond Meat are expanding their relationship. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, leaders from across the globe are gathered in Switzerland for the World Economic Forum. President Trump is touting the strength of the U.S. economy. We're joined by Richard DeKayser, an economist at Wells Fargo, based in Washington, D.C. Richard, earlier in the news, we heard what the president was saying about the U.S. economy. Do you agree with that? Is the U.S. right now experiencing significantly strong economic growth?
Well, I think the president has attached his usual degree of hyperbole, but fundamentally, yeah. I mean, the U.S. economy is in terrific shape. The unemployment rate, 3.5% nationally, is incredibly low. The stock market gains seem to be legitimate, that is to say, not a bubble. So there's a lot to crow about. But again, as you might expect, there's a bit of hype attached as well.
Now we're seeing, and I guess this remains to be seen if it actually happens, but we're told from Davos that it looks like the U.S. and China are going to try to have a phase two trade deal wrapped up before his first term. I mean, if so, I guess that would be significant.
Maybe. It all depends, of course, what's in the deal. We've seen the phase one deal so far, and it's a little bit underwhelming. We see basically commitments by China to increase purchases of certain goods and services, mostly agricultural goods. That will be welcome. The enforcement mechanisms are a little toothless. So the question is, what if they don't follow through? And it's not clear that there's going to be any real consequences. There are also commitments to tighten things up along the lines of intellectual property, crackdown on copyright infringement in China. Again, if followed through upon, that would be great. So that's all just phase one. Phase two, of course, lies ahead. And as I said, if we were to see a significant throttling back of tariffs across the board vis-a-vis China, that would, in fact, be welcome news. What we've gotten so far, however, is mostly small potatoes. Welcome. Things aren't deteriorating as they were for most of 2019. But it hasn't been a big rollback as yet.
Has it been at all surprising that the U.S. economy seems to, as you mentioned earlier, it's still fundamentally still doing well. The Chinese economy has suffered. I'm sure it's more nuanced than just to say it's the tariffs that are behind the struggle in the Chinese economy. But interesting that that's what a lot of people were predicting for the U.S. economy.
You're right that we shouldn't lay everything at the door of tariff policy, but you're also right. China is much more exposed to U.S. tariff pressures, which in fact were even greater. That is to say, the Chinese retaliatory tariffs on U.S. exports to China were about a quarter to a third the size of the tariffs that the U.S. imposed on China. So China's got more skin in the game vis-a-vis U.S. Trade, and the U.S. actions against China were even greater. So it's not wrong to say that the trade wars hurt China more than it has the U.S.
So
it has taken a toll on both.
In general, with Davos, I mean, is it just sort of a lot of chit-chatting and speech-making, or does anything of significance really ever come out of this assembly?
It's more chit-chatting, posturing, trying to represent policy perspectives for leaders on the global stage. But there's also some substance as well. That is to say, the extent that they identify through their selection of priorities. So we've got global warming as a priority at this year's Davos, as we do cybersecurity. That's not to say that there are going to be any major breakthroughs, but the fact that they're at the top of the list matters for something.
Interesting analysis. Thank you so much. Always good stuff. Richard DeKayser, an economist at Wells Fargo, based in Washington, D.C. Just ahead, Starbucks plans to add more plant-based menu options. Shares of Beyond Meat are up after Starbucks said it would add more plant-based options to its stores. We welcome Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, what is Starbucks saying about more plant-based options?
Well, Cisco, it's not just Starbucks. Everybody's talking about more plant-based options. In fact, the fancy food show is going on right now in San Francisco. And, you know, to be honest with you, I've counted probably about 300 new plant-based everything. But this announcement comes off the heels of Beyond Meat working number one with Dunkin' Donuts, and they actually have Snoop Dogg as their spokesperson, and up in Canada with Subway, and there they have Martha Stewart as their spokesperson. So bottom line is, you know, both for Starbucks, this is a huge plus, as well as for Beyond Meat.
Yeah, Beyond Meat stock up more than 14% today. I guess what maybe remains to be seen, is this just a fad? Everyone's kind of jumping on the Beyond Meat bandwagon, or does this have staying power?
I think it has staying power. In fact, last week at NRF's Big Show, which is the National Retail Federation, on stage I actually interviewed Seth Goldman, who's Beyond Meat's executive chair. And he was talking about the global expansion. And while they use pea protein here in the U.S. For Beyond Meat, what they're looking to do is in all the countries that they go in, they're going to use whatever protein is the most accessible there. So it could be quinoa. It could be hemp. It could be a variety of different proteins. And that's a very smart strategy for Beyond Meat to use. So it's going to be different. It's going to be real local, no matter where they go in the world.
So you touched on Dunkin' Donuts. This is Starbucks really trying to continue competing in the breakfast wars.
Absolutely. And I've got to tell you, I saw the Snoop Dogg commercials for Dunkin' Donuts, and they're fabulous. It brings a whole new customer base into Dunkin' Donuts, which is just so smart. And it'll be interesting to see who Beyond Meat uses as their celebrity spokesperson for Starbucks, because that's been key for Beyond Meat as they roll out. They're finding celebrity spokespeople that really not only are plant-based and reinforce that message, but bring a new customer into Starbucks in this case.
Now, for Beyond Meat, this just, I mean, it just seems like an unbelievable gift that you have practically every significant restaurant chain all battling to serve your product.
Exactly. With the exception of Burger King, who's with Impossible Foods, Beyond Meat's number one competitor. And the Burger King Incredible Whopper, if you would, isn't doing as well as initially it did. The novelty has really fallen off. And I think that with the Whopper, especially since it's grilled on the same grill as meat and chicken, they're probably not going to do so well at Impossible. I think that the brilliance is going into breakfast sandwiches for Beyond Meat. And their breakfast sausage, and I've tasted it, is delicious.
And when it comes to, we touched on the staying power of all this, do you think it, you've already said you think it has the staying power, but will it be sort of a minority item on the menu as opposed to the real meat and potatoes for these restaurants?
I don't think so, because in both cases, both for Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat, they're not going for the true vegan. They're going for what's now being called the flexitarian. Those people who want to eat more plants in their diet, not get rid of meat entirely, but perhaps just once or twice a week, having a plant-based protein instead of an animal protein.
Thanks so much, Phil. Always good analysis and info. Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Again, Beyond Meat stock up a little more than 14% today after announcing the deal with Starbucks. Up next, renovations can add value to your home, but which ones are most worth the effort?
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Some home renovations are more worthwhile than others in terms of added value. Let's learn more from Bryant Wickert. He is president and owner of Acunet Mortgage, based in Waukesha, Wisconsin, a proud sponsor of the Noon Business Hour here on WBBM. Brian, always good to have you on the show. People, when they are thinking about selling their homes, they're thinking about all the things that they would love to do to the home. But the fact is, some of the time, you're just not going to get back the money that you spend.
That is absolutely correct. And my best advice for folks is if you're going to do something to your home, do it before you sell so that you can enjoy it for a few years instead of just doing it right before you put your house on the market. The things that have always gotten the most bang for their buck in terms of return on investment is either a bathroom remodel or a kitchen remodel. And the key, if you're doing it close to putting it your house on the market, is not to overdo it. You don't want to go with, you know, the Spanish super duper rare wood or something like that. You want to kind of keep it down the middle. But those two things are traditionally the best return on investment, although I'd say in general, you might get 50 or 60% of your money back on the actual cost of doing the improvement.
So does it then just help you sell the house? You know, maybe it moves faster, but not necessarily get more money for it?
Correct. Now, if you remodel a bathroom, let's say, and I'm helping my daughter and son-in-law shop for a new home right now, and so they've got, you know, both things on their mind. They're looking at new homes to buy, and let me tell you, they are wowed by those that have brand spanking new bathrooms, right? And at the same time, theirs needs a little updating. So it's not like a buyer goes through a home and says, oh, you know, that house has a brand new bathroom. I'm going to pay $10,000 more. It's just all part of the big ball of string that allows a buyer to get excited about that house and probably will pay somewhat more, but not the direct cost. And they've got to really watch it when they redo their bathroom to be prudent so that they don't overspend.
What about, you know, kitchens and bathrooms? That makes a lot of sense. What about sort of the nuts and bolts of the home? I'm thinking about the roof. I'm thinking about the HVAC, those things that maybe aren't sexy, but people want to know they're not going to have some big expense shortly after they move in.
I think that goes into the category, Cisco, that you mentioned just a minute ago, which is this. You're not going to get more dollars for your home if you say, hey, I just put in all new windows 2 years ago. Because windows are expensive, by the way. You're not going to get a higher price, but that could be the tipping point for a buyer saying, oh, honey, let's go with that one with the new windows instead of this other one where, you know, the windows are 25 years old. So I think that's more of a tipping point, not necessarily a price thing. Then there's also the item of financing the improvements that you're going to do in the home. If it's small enough, maybe you can float it on some credit cards. Maybe you get $10,000 a room. And then after the project's over, you can look at doing a refinance. Of course, a home equity line of credit is a very common tool as well. But mortgage lenders are always going to look at the value of the home before the project is done, not the as-completed value.
Thanks so much. Brian Wickert, president and owner, Acunet Mortgage, based in Waukesha. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday, a look at the busiest booking month of the year for the cruise industry.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Some investors lean toward growth stocks while others take more of a value approach. We'll discuss the pluses and minuses with an investing expert. Despite the cold temperatures, this is wave season. We'll discuss this great time of year to book a cruise in Travel Tuesday. A man wanted for murder in Michigan is arrested in a suburb west of Chicago following an hours-long stand. Off. President Trump's impeachment trial is underway in the U.S. Senate, the latest just ahead from CBS News. On Wall Street, the Dow down 61, NASDAQ is down 14, and the S&P is down 5 points. Oil is flat today. Sunshine in Chicagoland all day long, headed to a high of 30. Right now, 25 degrees.
CBS News Special Report. The Senate impeachment trial of President Trump is underway. Chief Justice John Roberts convened the proceedings. Democratic leader Chuck Schumer says the rules of the trial seem to be designed by President Trump for President Trump.
The eyes of the founding fathers are upon us. History will be our final judge. Will senators rise to the occasion?
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the plan is fair and even-handed, tracking closely on past precedents.
The Senate's fair process will draw a sharp contrast with the unfair and precedent-breaking inquiry that was carried on by the House of Representatives.
CBS's Chip Reed says the schedule will be a challenge for the senator jurors.
Those are going to be some long days. They're 12-hour days, or maybe 10 and 14, whatever it's going to be. And the most difficult part for the senators, they just have to sit there and be quiet.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Pam Coulter.
WBBM News Time, 12:32, the Noon Business Hour, presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets are trending lower right now. Let's talk about it with Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Paul, what do you make of what you're seeing so far today?
Just a little bit of a reaction to the coronavirus in China. It's obviously hit a lot of Chinese-related and travel stocks. And that really got out of the way after the first hour, and the markets recovered kind of to the flat line-ish, and that's where we've been trading all the rest of the day. So not a lot of reaction to the news out of Washington or, for that matter, out of China.
Yeah, speaking of China, hearing that maybe there might be a phase two trade deal by the end of the year. Is that something that Wall Street is actually thinking is possible?
I doubt it, given the fact that the phase one took the better part of 2+ years to come to fruition after running around multiple different trees to get there. I'm not sure that we're going to see a trade deal before the end of the year, certainly before the election. I think there's going to be some impetus to try to get that done, but Washington's going to be kind of preoccupied with both the impeachment as well as the process of electing the next president over the summer months.
Now, when it comes to actually getting a deal, whatever is in phase two, does the only thing that matter is it just getting rid of the tariffs, or is there more that Wall Street's looking for?
I think there's a lot more that they're looking for. I mean, the trade one was primarily agriculture. I think we're going to be looking for two to be a lot more centered on technology and a lot of those issues that really didn't get addressed in the first go round, as well as some of the reduction in tariffs. After trade one, nothing got changed as far as the tariffs go. Those are still implemented, and although we haven't added any more, they're still in place. So again, I think it's going to be a look to see whether we can pull back from that and allow for more free trade.
Let's talk about earnings season still underway, but what are you thinking about what we've gotten so far?
Well, still early, and certainly we were highlighting last week all the banking and financial institutions, and they generally came in a little bit better than expected. And I think expectations are that this season will be better than last. The expectations for the full year is quarterly earnings to be up roughly 10% over a year ago level, and that would be supportive of stock prices. Last year, the market rose 30% without the help of earnings. This year, we're looking for earnings to help out a little bit and allow maybe for the market to continue its trek higher.
And is that, you think, going to be broad-based, or do you think there's going to be certain sectors maybe that are more attractive this year?
I think it's going to be more of the same. The best growth that we're seeing, both especially in the top line, is in technology, bottom line as well. We're seeing good dividend growth, surprisingly, out of a lot of the technology names. So I think technology is going to be one of the places that is going to continue to be the star that shines. So it's going to be an area that we're going to keep an eye on. If they falter, I think we see the markets come back and have maybe a little bit of a correction.
Looking today, we just talked in our last segment about Starbucks and its deal with Beyond Meat. Kind of fascinating to see the rise of that meatless meat product, that meat-like product that so many restaurants are now clamoring for. As investors, is this kind of difficult? Because, yeah, it looks like it's doing well now, but you don't know if it's a fad or if it's something that's going to be long-term.
No, that's true. And, you know, for us, we take a look at the financials, and what we're interested in is profitability. They're not quite there yet. Cash flow, meaning that they're making money from the business. Again, not quite there yet. But with a lot of these deals inked, we could see some profitability in year 2-3 from now. So, again, a lot of investors are betting on the fact that they're going to get to that profitability level. But you're right, it could be very well a fad or something that sticks, but maybe not as pervasive as everybody originally thought for them to get to that profitability level.
Always appreciate the analysis. Paul Nolte, he is portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Up next, Travel Tuesday, why it's the best time of the year to book a cruise.
Bye. Sell. Listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we're celebrating wave season by talking about cruise deals. We welcome Janet Foster, president of Wilson Travel and Cruise in St. Charles. Janet, before we talk about what sorts of deals are available, are we saying that we book in January and then go anytime during the year, or are we talking about booking and actually going on the cruise this time of year?
We're talking about booking the cruise during the month of January, and some of that, of course, might be travel this winter, but a lot of it is travel throughout the rest of the year. This is when the cruise lines are running a lot of promotions. You've probably heard them on the radio or seen them on TV or papers. And they're wanting to get people back in the mode of purchasing travel.
Why is that? Why January is, why is that such a hot time to book a cruise?
Well, especially if you're in the colder part of our country. You've gotten through the holidays and you didn't get anything done maybe in the fall before the holidays started. And now, whoops, all of a sudden it's cold here. You're stuck inside and it's time to think about it and get moving and get something booked for this year.
Or you didn't get what you wanted for Christmas and now you're just going to buy it for yourself.
Probably. And maybe somebody gave you some money.
All right. So what kind of deals are we talking about? I mean, is this a significant savings if you're booking around this time?
Well, they do various promotions. With cruises, it's not usually dollars off, it's add-ons. In other words, maybe if you paid for a certain category, you would be upgraded to a higher category. Or they include some of their packages. Maybe gratuities are included, or a beverage package, or something of that nature. Excursions sometimes can be included, so many per trip. And different things like that, more than it would be just a straight discount, although we have had some that the typical BOGO type of deal where the first person is at regular price and the second one is at a discount.
So when it comes to booking these, do you grab the deal while you see it, you know, get that deposit down, or do you wait and are you patient and kind of shop around?
I think you grab it when they're making an offering. Sometimes if you're booking well ahead, like over a year, maybe it's low when it first comes out, maybe it isn't, and that's a time to think about whether you want to actually book at that minute. But in general, that's when they're offering a lot of their good specials. And sometimes if you saw something later that you felt was better, they might let us rebook to the new promotion. Not always, but sometimes.
So because of online now, you have so many people just going online to book all of their travel. You're a travel agent, so I assume you are pro-travel agent. So.
Well, certainly. I've owned this agency for about 40 years, and the agency itself is right around 60 years been in business. And so we think we have a lot of value, actually, and I have agents working with me here who've been doing this for 30 years. And in that amount of time, you learn a lot, you've seen a lot, you've been to a lot of places. And we think we add the knowledge as well as the personal side. If you need to talk to somebody, one of the slogans you hear in our community is, without an agent, you're on your own. And so that can be useful if something happens.
Yeah, I booked an all-inclusive once, and online, you know, everything sort of looks alike when you haven't been to one, and that's where I could use a travel agent to say, all right, which one should I actually go to?
Yes, and people say to me, well, is this beach better or is that beach better? And I have gals here who can answer that question. I can't because that's not what I specialize in, but between the four full-time people, we can pretty much cover a lot of the globe.
Well, now is the time to book a cruise if you're interested in it. Thank you, Janet Foster, president of Wilson Travel and Cruise in St. Charles. Janet's joining us on Travel Tuesday. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, a discussion on value versus growth stocks.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Investors can target stocks with potential for growth or so-called value stocks. Let's talk about the pros and cons of both. Steve Esposito is joining us, Executive Director at Morgan Stanley Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Steve, very quickly, growth versus value for people who are new to stocks. What are we talking about when we use those words?
Well, hello. Value versus growth is traditionally a more safer way of investing, people would view it, because they're companies that are trading at low price to earnings, book values, price to sales, etc. Typically, many of them will pay a nice dividend, but they're not as exciting, let's say, as some of the growth prospects that are out there. So money has been just pouring into growth, helping to create a fulfilling, self-fulfilling prophecy, while value has lagged behind as people want more excitement in the portfolio than, let's say, necessarily value.
So how does an investor figure out, do I go the value route or the growth route, especially given the fact that you say all kinds of money's gone into those growth stocks, and so some of them are pretty pricey?
Oh, absolutely. The valuations right now, many have pointed out in Wall Street that the value spread between value and growth is the widest in history, even wider than it was in the dot-com bubble. And those of us who were managing money during the dot-com bubble remember what happened. It was just buy anything that was involved in a certain sector. Right now, you've got a lot of the high-capped companies that are leading this market, trading in multiples that are just historically high, while simultaneously having corporations trading at multiples or historically low. The wider that spread gets, the uglier it's going to be when it corrects. Same conversation I had 20 years ago when I was doing this as well, and eventually it ended really ugly. So I think investors need to pull in the reins on buying growth at any price. Growth at a reasonable price is fine, but you've got to look at the forgotten that are out there trading at very low multiples, valuations, and a great economy with great dividends. So I think that's where, you know, if you're a more moderate investor, conservative, moderate, I'd look there rather than getting into some of these unicorns and some of these just well-known companies at really crazy valuations, 20, 30 times book value and EBITDA. And it's not sustainable. It's just not.
When it comes to value stocks, then, are you just looking for dividends and maybe that sort of stability that comes with those stocks? Or do you think that those have significant potential for growth as well?
Well, yes, all of the above. When you look at some of these well-known companies that are trading, whether it be the healthcare industry, the financial, the energy sector, you know, it's interesting. Energy is 30% higher than it was a couple years ago, but the stocks are all down. Healthcare companies were worried about what was going to happen regarding socialized medicine, and they all dropped, even though they're putting up very good numbers and the price, the dividends are fantastic, especially in an economy where you've got, you know, 2% interest rates or 1.5%. To be able to get a 3, 4, 5% dividend is wonderful while you're paying 7 times earnings for something, which, you know, if you just go from 7 times earning to 10 times earning, that's a 40% move. And again, it's the valuations are just scary good, and some of the other stuff really scares me and really reminds me of 1999. There's a lot of parallels. And even though the data actually suggests it's worse now than it was in 1999 in terms of the spread. And again, we all know how that ended.
Yeah, certainly need to be wise about it, that's for sure. Thank you. Steve Esposito, Executive Director in Morgan Stanley Wealth Management. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast available later on today at the radio.com app. You can also always listen to past episodes on the radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.